You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
Obviously, I brought him up as a single parent. And in a way, for me, that's been the easiest. I always say to women, sometimes it's easier to bring them up on your own, especially if you do breakups and you're not sure about if you want to have a continual relationship with the guy. I've had no aggro with Harvey because no dad's been present. The other guys, aggro.
Welcome to a new episode, everyone. Now, we're recording this in the week that is the kids' end of term, and I am done. Absolutely done with plays and with mufti days and with all the stuff that comes with end of term. So I'm checking out. I'm done for the week. Alison, how are you? Tell me your week's been better.
I love it. You need to have a little bit of energy left, Wendy, because we have got a good guest to chat to today.
We have.
I'm kind of done too, but having said that, I had such a nice parenting experience this week. My 13-year-old, I took her to see Mean Girls, the new musical that's on at in the West End. And it was just like such, I feel like this is like one of those parenting moments where it's like something from my past. So I loved Mean Girls when I think I was a teenager. Maybe I was in my 20s when it came out. I don't know. And then something that my 13-year-old is just as into. And then we went and had this amazing experience together. It was just like, this is what parenting a teenager is all about. People say that teenagers are hard. No,
you're winning.
Don't believe them.
You're winning. So tell us who we've got on the pod today, please.
Well, our guest today has parented 3 teenagers so far. So I think she might have a thing or two to say about it. Our guest today is Katie Price, business person, author, reality TV star and mum to Harvey Jr., Princess, Jet and Bunny. And we last had Katie on the podcast in 2021. So 3 years on, we thought we'd invite her back to see what's new. And there's a lot to catch up on. One thing which is new is Katie's latest book, This Is Me, which is a no-holds-barred, utterly honest deep dive into the past 30 years. In it, she reflects really openly on the events that have shaped her life. Katie, a huge welcome back to the Net Mums podcast.
Well, well, well. Hello, ladies.
She's back. Hello, Katie.
Well, I'm back. And what a hell of a lot has happened in 3 years.
Exactly. Oh, yes.
So let's kick off 30 years in the industry that is entertainment. That's impressive and it's pretty tough to work in that industry. How have you seen it change over those 30 years?
Oh, my God. So I've had lots of conversations about this because when I started, when I was 17, and boy, I'm 46 now. I can't believe I'm 4 years away from being 50. So I really have much been in the industry and seen it change so much. So if there's any new listeners to this podcast of yours, so bring yourself back 30 years ago, if you're old enough to do that. I was sweet 17, the covers of the magazines, when I say like, they don't even exist, some of them now, but like Loaded, FHM, GQ, Front Magazine, I'm just trying to think, Esquire. So I was doing all like the men's mags. And when I say men's mags, they're not like the top shelf mags, like men's mags, you know. And then it was newspaper stuff. There was no such thing as social media at all. I wouldn't even know that was going to even exist. So 30 years on, we're now in a world of social media where you get what they're called influences now. That wasn't even a thing back then. So now the spectrum of things is so out there, where people now have a voice. You can now retouch your pictures. You can now even not have to look like what you do when you take a picture, because you've got these apps now that can change everything. It can even do your makeup, your hair, your body size, to the point that are you really that person who you see in the pictures? And from that, I think now the media have got now more damning in the way that the stories they write about people, they're not always the truth. And it can be so shocking because they need to be on form in a different way so they get clickbait to keep them relevant.
Yeah.
So, yes, it has changed a lot. It's given an opportunity for more people, you know, in the LGBT community, up-and-coming girls, guys, you name it, there's a platform for absolute anyone out there. So it
that's
has
a
changed
huge change.
A lot.
Yeah, that's massive. And another thing that's changed is, you know, 22 years ago, you became a mum. How would you describe Katie the mum, and how different is Katie the mum today versus Katie the mum back when you first had Harvey?
Well, I've always been a maternal girl, always, even from a young age. I want to care for animals, like nurture. I'm a nurturer by heart. I'm a caring person by heart. Hence why I was trained to be a registered nurse before I entered this industry. And I've always said now, it's never too late, I want to train to be a paramedic, because I'm that caring kind of person. It's just trying to fit that in the schedule. But I am trained to be a life coach now because I've gone through so much. But me going back 22 years is when I had Harvey. And it was at a time when my career was taking off and I got pregnant. And I thought, well, this could be the end of my career now if I'm pregnant, you know, so I was doing the Labs Mags and all of that. And I decided, no, I'm keeping Harvey. So I had like a healthy pregnancy. It was an amazing pregnancy. I was sick at the beginning. I'm always sick. I hate that. This, you know, you make arrangements to do things and then you're in your fetal position in bed. I can't go out. I can't do anything. I feel sick.
Oh, I was sick in my handbag on the tube once. That was a particularly low moment.
When you get that sickness, it's just the nausea. And even if you're not sick, it's the feeling of you're going to be sick. It's all. So I don't envy anyone who's pregnant out there who goes through the sickness, because it's awful. And then Harvey, 3 weeks late, then I got induced. I don't think they do that these days, keep you that long, but they did back then. So I had him natural, and blimey, I didn't know what to expect. I was young. I thought, yeah, I'll do all this. Had my playlist of music. I thought I'd play, you know, all this. But come the day, I didn't play any of that music when then contractions got worse and worse and worse. Anyway, I had Harvey, and he was perfect. Obviously, until he was 6 weeks old, and then that's when the journey started, that he was born blind, and then, you know, he's now got his complex needs. But he's 22 now, and he's the most loving, well-mannered man. I'm not allowed to call him a boy anymore, because he goes, no, Mum, I'm a man, not a boy, because I was calling my baby boy.
He'll always be your baby boy. That's okay.
He's the only one out of the older ones who will lie and want me to cuddle him, still stroke his head, hold his hand. I know he's a man, but he just loves me so. I am his absolute life. And obviously, I brought him up as a single parent. And in a way, for me, that's been the easiest. I always say to women, sometimes it's easier to bring them up on your own, especially if you do breakups and you're not sure about if you want to have a continual relationship with the guy. I've had no aggro with Harvey because no dad's been present. The other guys, aggro. So for me, being a single parent for Harvey has been a dream. I know he can be difficult because of his complex needs, but I'm the most patient person when it comes to kids. I'm chilled, laid back. Yes.
And how's Harvey doing? Because isn't he at a specialist college in Gloucestershire? How's he getting on?
Yeah, so, well, I say I'm getting on. I do help a lot of people because obviously when I got told he was blind, that was it. It was like, well, what happens now? And it was only by talking to other mums or parents that I learned more from that than you do the doctors, of help, where to go and stuff like that, communicating with charities, local charities who deal with kids with complex needs. And so from that, yeah, that's how that helped me. So now with Harvey, he needs what they call statementing. And there'd be a lot of parents out there who might have a child with autism or something, and they do the ECHP form and helping do that. It's not easy. When you fill out these forms, you have to be spot on. So I'm at a stage now where Harvey's been at college for like 3 years and he's entitled to go to college, and you had to do all your statementing for that. And now they want to put him in just like independent living. And I'm like, well, he's not ready for that, especially not mentally, because he's still like a baby. But now someone in the system has put in saying he's got no healthcare issues. And we're all like, are you joking? So we've appealed it. Harvey is known and very much documented he has healthcare issues. It's to do with funding. So I know there might be a lot of parents listening to this going, oh, my God, this is the same for me, because you have to prove this, prove that. And it's such
it's always a fight, isn't it?
Yeah, so he is at college in Cheltenham. He's there till April because we have appealed this, saying, how can you say he's got no healthcare needs? And finding the next placement for him. And then when we do, I would definitely move him more near a home, because he misses me. I miss him. Because he's like 3-4 hours away from me. So by the time I get there, I spend like 2 hours with him, and then it's time to come back. It's like a whole day. But, you know, that's just one of the children. The others are like teenagers. The others are like under 10. So they're all at different ages, all at different levels. And I love it. And I love the chaos. And I love it. And I want more kids.
Well, I was about to say, you said you've got infinite patience. You bloody need it. It's like, that's a lot of chaos.
I'm not patient with a lot of things. But when it comes to children, I've got patience. It's really weird. Like, because I got diagnosed with ADHD last year, not even though I hate labels, but it makes sense to how I am as a person. And so some things I'm like, no, I've got to do this now, do this now. But when it's the kids, I'm just so patient and chilled. Like, because I brought my kids up in the countryside, I suppose they've all been a bit feral as well. I'm the type of mum that if they want to go outside and they just want to go outside, in their pants, in welly boots, and jump in a muddy puddle, let them do it. If they want to enjoy and do that, like, well, I've always had horses and that, you know, and they're sitting in the hay or they're trying to eat the goat's feed or the horse feed. I did all that as a kid, and I just let them do it. You know, if they want to push each other around in a wheelbarrow, let them do it, you know. So, yeah, nature, I've brought them up. I don't know what it would have been like if I brought them up in a town environment, because when I ever take them to London, it's weird for them because there's so many, like, cars, buildings. It's just different. They're used to countryside. And in a way, for me, I'm glad I did, because I get so scared now, even of the old ones, like Junior Princess, because now they go to London. It's not them I worry about. It's other people. The crime that goes on and that just petrifies me. Now, you know, Junior's driving. I worry about other people on the road. And now Princess is doing her driving test. I'm like, oh, my God, my little baby girl's now going to be driving. You never stop worrying about your kids at whatever age they are.
So is that one of the reasons you want to have another one? Because your little babies are growing up. You've said that you plan on trying to have another baby, haven't you?
Yes, well, there'll be a programme coming out soon about my IVF journey because although I might act young and look younger, my body isn't. My body's still 46. And I was talking to some of my friends the other day because sometimes at night I wake up and my bed is soaking wet, them cold sweats, and I'm like, what the hell is this going on? I still have my periods and that, so maybe I'm premenopausal. So I'm at that stage and I do want more kids, but I didn't realise until I did the IVF that when you're born with a set of eggs. And every period you have, you know, you get rid of eggs and stuff. So mine are quite old now, so it's whether it produces a good egg or not. So I'm at that stage and it's like, I know I've got 5 kids and people be like, well, you should be grateful you've got 5. I am grateful. But I know myself, I want more, and I don't want to be told by a doctor or something that I can't have more. So I'm looking into other journeys that if I want more, how I can do that. Because I know I'm not done. I know I still want... If I could have two more kids, I would.
Amazing. And you're going to be an auntie again soon, aren't you? Because your sister Sophie is having another baby. What kind of auntie are you? Like, do you spoil your nephew at the moment?
Do you know what? I absolutely love it. And I said she's having a king's choice. She's got a boy and now she's got a little girl on the way.
So exciting. How
she dresses her kids are different to me. Like with Prince, so Bunny doesn't really like pink now, but like with Bunny, it was all the tutus, the crowns, the crystals, the bling. And she's like old-fashioned Victorian. I'm like that for my sister. You know, like the Spanish, how they do it, the ombre, what is it? The ombre glass, whatever they call it. You know that fabric?
Yeah.
And Bunny likes old-fashioned-y. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get a load of frills, this baby and stuff. And I've said she can use one of my old silver cross prams that I've got. And I just can't get rid of them. Do you know, when you've got five kids, I'm a hoarder and I hate getting rid of anything from their first shoes to socks to blankets. I don't know what it is. I've still got their belly buttons on the pegs to their hospital bands. And I, honestly, I just love it all, the whole journey. So, yeah, I'm so excited to become an auntie again.
So let's go back to you mentioned briefly that you had your ADHD diagnosis last year. How has that diagnosis impacted your life? And kind of how does ADHD show up in your behaviour and in your day-to-day life?
Well, all through my years, I mean, when I was at school, there was never such thing as ADHD. There's a lot of people back when I was at school who might have had slight autism or ADHD, behaviour problems, but no one knew really anything about it.
Yeah.
And it was my mum who was like, why do you act the way you do? Why? Because your brother and sister aren't like this. You know, what is wrong with you? Like, my reactions to things and stuff like that. And now it makes sense. If I knew I had the ADHD, well, it was obvious I had something, but no one knew what. Then it probably in the past, I wouldn't have got into trouble how I have. And when I say trouble, my reactions to things, like especially social media, if an ex or someone said anything, I'd put these quotes up or argue back or do something, because that was how I...
It's the impulsiveness, isn't it? That's known to be like a thing with ADHD, so you can't control impulsive behaviour.
There's a lot of women my age, because we are busy and we can take on more than one task, sometimes it can be hidden. And there's a lot of people, a lot of older women who have got it and they haven't been diagnosed with it. So in the end, my mum's like, right, you need to go and see a doctor. We're booking you in. I'm like, if it makes you feel happy, mum, I'll do it. So I went and saw the doctor three times, took my dad to a place in Harley Street. And they make your parents fill out forms from when you was a childhood. And then they assess me and all of that. It's quite a long process. It's not quick. And I remember I was in Thailand having some tattoos done, which also my mum has a go at me about now. And
my mum still doesn't know I've got mine. I'm 45.
I don't.
She doesn't know. And she doesn't listen, so we're fine.
But if it's not surgery, you've started with the tattoos now. Anyway, so I was on the phone to the doctor and I said, well, have I got ADHD or not then? He said, what do you think? I said, well, I know I'm nuts. I must have something. He said, yeah, you have. You've got it severely. So, but the interesting thing is, where I've moved house, because I keep everything, I have found my old school reports from junior school up through my senior school. And in every report, on every lesson, it's the same thing. She's capable of the work, but she's easily distracted. She can a lack of concentration, all of this, and it all makes sense. So I think that's why a lot of kids nowadays do get assessed for ADHD, and then you know how to deal with it. For like now, the way I've learned, because I know about it, I've learned how to deal with situations now because I understand my reactions before aren't the right way to react with things. Say if I get a text message, normally I'd be like, right, I just want to write that back. And I'll write long, long texts. When really I think, right, Kate, before you write back, think about it. Think what you're going to do. You don't have to reply back now. And now I know how to deal with it.
I'm trying to teach my 13-year-old to do this, let alone anything else. Don't just reply. Take a minute.
But I now understand myself. And obviously I had a breakdown 6 years ago. And I mean, the whole book is about my mental health, dealing with the media pressures because they've got worse because I used to have a good relationship with them and learning not to react to things how I used to. And my head feels so much clearer. I'm lighter and more positive. And where I know how to manage myself, doors are opening and I feel refreshed, like I've gone through a washing machine and now come out, reset the button. I now have the knowledge, the experience and the understanding of everything. So now it's like, yeah, I'm on a new journey again. It's like the new comeback for me. I might be 46, but that's just the age is just a number to me. It really, really is. And I don't think people should be scared going, oh, I'm going to be 30 soon or I'm going to hit my 40s or 50s. It's good to get older because you get knowledge. And at the time, you can go at any time. People always think you're going to die when you're older. You can die at any time. So I'm like, live each day as if it's your last because you never know. So that's the way I live my life now. And my kids, yeah, they all say I'm nuts, I'm chaos, I'm crazy, I'm fun, I'm loving. And I can't change my personality in the way I am, but I know how to control my reactions to things and not be so impulsive because I can be ever so impulsive. But it works for me now. I understand myself. Therapy, this, that, which is why now I'm training to be a life coach so I can help other people. Because I've been there, done it. I mean, I am one person. No one can't say I haven't had real life trauma events. I really have. And you just have to learn to deal with one thing at a time.
So what do you think of the bigger kids following in their parents' footsteps, Junior and Princess, and working in the public eye? What words of advice have you given them about it?
That's interesting. There was yesterday an article. Now, I don't know if this is the real thing. Is it a Nepo baby or something they call
Nepo
it?
Nepo baby.
Right. What is a Nepo baby? Because I read something about Jamie Oliver. Is it like kids who get thrown in the industry on the back of their parents? Or did I read that wrong?
Yeah. So it's basically, I guess, in the context of your kids, it might be the fact that maybe Junior and Princess are getting work or getting jobs because they are your kids.
Right.
So it's like nepotism. Basically any celebrity whose kids work in the industry get called Nepo babies, not necessarily because it is nepotism, but just because that's like a tag that they're given.
Well, I would like to disagree that with Junior and Princess. Let me tell you why. They have been brought up with camera. That's all they know. But they are generally, we are not pushy parents whatsoever. I'm not a pushy parent. I'm not whatever my kids choose to do is what they choose to do. Now, Junior naturally is a talented dancer, singer. He got his scholarship at school to do drama, acting. Like, he's talented. You can't make someone be a singer or dancer. You're either natural or you're not. So we always knew he would do something like that. And he doesn't, like, if you look at his Instagram and that, I don't even think there's a picture of me and him on it. Because he doesn't want to be associated. He wants to do it himself, wants to credit himself. So he does that. And then with Princess, you can't deny she's not a pretty girl, so she gets offered all this stuff, no different to anyone else. And again, she doesn't use us on her page or anything. I don't go to events with her to be pictured to help her. Same with Junior. Like, they do it all themselves. Yeah, people might say in a headline it's their daughter or their son, but you've got to give them credit. They're doing it themselves. Don't interfere. And I don't certainly don't make phone calls to get them jobs and that. They do it purely on their own, and that's what they want to do. They're like, no, we want to do it ourselves, not have any of your input.
So, that's really good, though. That's really nice. Yeah. I have to say they're at the age now where they're having relationships. And you talk in the book about all the different relationships that you've had over the years. What do you hope that your kids learn from all of your experiences as they kind of grow up and start meeting people themselves?
Well, this is another interesting question, because I've finished a domestic abuse course because I didn't know what a healthy relationship was. From a young age, I've gone from the wrong kind of men. So I have been in toxic relationships, gaslighting, narcissists, mental abuse, physical abuse relationships. So I've had to learn what healthy relationships are, which is very foreign to me, because I never realised in what kind of relationships I'm in. So now, luckily, when the kids, how they are, you know, you can't pick and choose who your kids are going to like, but you can help advise, like what a red flag is, or, you know, but you do learn not to interfere too much, because you know what it's like when you're younger, and if you're into someone, you don't care what your parents say, you don't want them to go against you, you want to still be on their side but give them advice. There's just a way of how to do it, and remind your kids that you were young once. We know all the trick in the books of the craftiness, you know, we're not stupid. But I am very open with my kids, and I say it as it is. So, and they do respect me for that. You have to be there as a parent. You know they're going to get heartbroken. You know you're going to have the Kevin and Perry moments. Oh, telling me what to do. Like, of course you're going to get... And it makes me laugh, because I was exactly the same with my mum. And at the end of the day, I hate to admit it, but my mum was always right.
They always are. Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah. So yeah. How has that course you've been on helped? How are things going with JJ? Is it a different relationship now that you've done that course?
Completely. So I met him while I was doing it. So, and obviously he'd done maths, Married at First Sight. And on that show, it's weird because they do relationship stuff on that as well, on every aspect. Mm. So not only is it weird how he's done that journey on that show, yet I've been doing mine. So in this relationship, it's completely different to any relationship I've had, in the way I don't need to rush to get married. I don't need to rush to have kids. Enjoy the moment. There's no rush for anything. As much as people are like, you're going to get married again, you having kids. I'm like, just let us enjoy what we're doing. And it works so well. Even my family, like, thank God for that, Kate. You're taking your time. And it's knowing what a healthy relationship is. Not having someone ringing you every 5 minutes. Where are you? What are you doing? Prove you're there. Take a picture. FaceTime me. Da, da, da. That is not healthy. You know, you are allowed to see your friends. And I'm like, oh, you don't mind if I see my friends? It's like, well, no, why would I mind? I'm like, oh, because I'm just used to someone like... And all of them, the jealousy, this and that. It's weird to be with someone where it's normal, what they call normal, healthy. So it's me having to get used to that, because I've only been used to the opposite in every relationship.
That's really good to hear. And now you've said in the past that you think you've put Princess off having surgery.
Oh, God.
Are you glad about that? And how do you think you'd feel if she ever did want to have something done?
So I'm not being a hypocrite when I say this, but I am a walk-in surgery lady, and I love surgery. And whatever I have done, I tell everybody about it. I don't know if that's the ADHD or what with me, but I tell everyone. I can't ever keep it in. I'm like, yeah, I've had this done, that done. Oh, I'm going to have this done, that done. But genuinely, I started my face and that when I was in my 40s. But... I know that I'd done my whole career natural apart from the boobs, and there was no airbrushing and all of that. It literally was how you see the picture. Now, I think girls, and I say it to Princess, that girls are having fillers, the lips, the surgery from the age of... I know I had my boobs on when I'm 18, but I'll come to that because I'm not a hypocrite. but they have all this filler in that. They all look the same. What are they going to look like when they're 46? It worries me because when I was 18 and that, they didn't even have Botox. Or if they did, I didn't even know about that, let alone filler and stuff like that. And I think because Princess has seen, people only see before and after pictures. They don't get to see really what happens in between when you look battered, when you're sore, you can't move this and that. My kids have seen it. So if that hasn't put them off, then I don't know what will. But Princess is so, like, not surgery thinking in her head at all. And she doesn't need it, even though my mum said I don't. I didn't listen, but still. Princess isn't, doesn't even talk about surgery. She's happy how she looks. So that's good. I was just never happy.
Still, so do never. You feel like your new house is a new start for you? You've said in the past that, and in the book as well, that your mental health struggles contributed to you being declared bankrupt and the eviction. And yes. Does it feel like now this new place, no bad memories, new start?
Oh, my God. From the moment I moved to that house, the only reason I bought that house is because my husband at the time, he had cheated on me with two of my best friends. It was well documented and in my last book. And that betrayal, and I knew where he had been in the house having sex. And I had to get out of that house. So I literally bought this house and it didn't stop because the affairs carried on. The house was haunted and I'm not joking. It was haunted. It was like it was like on my head, heaviness. People would come to that house. Some people wouldn't even go to that house because they hated the feel inside and everything. I think whoever buys that house, I would advise never buy it because the stuff I've had in that house is so extreme. And now not even going near that house is so light for me. Like the eviction thing's nothing to do with the bankruptcy. Again, I had bad luck in that house. This man wanted to turn it into a wedding venue and turn my fields into a gallop track and build me a house on my tennis courts. I then find out this guy's been in prison twice. If you Googled his name, he's been in prison twice. He's a forcer for doing what he's done to me, fly tipping. So I had to deal with the council and the mortgage company. They were like, you know, you've got to clear that fly tipping or we're going to have to get you out the house. That's where it all started. It's nothing to do with the bankruptcy. No. And then it's 2 years on, I still hadn't done it. So I had a choice of either doing it or me selling the house or them taking the house back and them sorting it all out. And I decided through all the crap I've gone through and I'm trying to better myself, I said, you know what, you take it back. You sell it, you take what the rest that I owe you for the mortgage, and then I get the rest back when they sell it. So that's the real situation of that. I think people think I've been evicted because of bankruptcy. No, bankruptcy is a separate thing to the house. Right. But you know what the media are like. They like to say, oh, she's now been evicted from a house from bankruptcy. The bankruptcy I've sorted out. Unfortunately, the bankruptcy started from my second marriage. You know, when you rely on your other half to help with the finances. Then I had a breakdown because of the situation I was in with the affairs and everything. And then I got depressed. And then when you're depressed, you don't answer your calls, you don't communicate, then you don't pay your bills on time, this. And then before you know it, very quickly, you're in this situation where you're in a mess. You just, everything's on you. So, and that's what happened to me. So now I've engaged, communicate, sorted out the bankruptcy. They take a cut of my money, which is fine. It sorts it out. And I'm fine with that because now it gives me a chance to carry on with my life. I still earn really good money. And now my comeback's coming, you know, and I'm in control of everything. It's just the media like to go on about it. And I'm not ashamed of any of it. If anything, it's made me learn and know never to let anyone or anything get me in a situation like that ever again. And you learn from it, and I'm not ashamed. And if there's anyone out there who are going through a bankruptcy, I get it. It's not a good time. It's a shit time. It is a shit time because then everything else feels bigger than it is. But if I got through it, I'm telling you, anyone can. Like, having bailiffs turn up your door and you don't even know why, and then they come up for the same thing and you're like, well, I only paid that the other week. What are you on about? And it just becomes noise. And then at the end of the day, you've got to think you've got your family and friends. That's what's important. Material really isn't important. Family and friends and your health is important. And I've learned that, and I'm happy with that. So my new house, I'm loving it. No stress, no, and it's a brand new house. I've never had a brand new house in my life. I've always had these country houses with my horses. So now I know no one's lived in it. It's definitely not haunted. And I'm kind of all myself, and I love coming home, putting my candles on, and everyone has seen a change in me. This is my home. Yeah. And the other one was far too big for me. 9 bedrooms on 3 floors, too big.
That's cute. But you mentioned the media a few times, and in the new book, in the latest book, you write an open letter to the press. And like, celebrities and the press have always had a bit of a tricky relationship. But having spent most of your life on the front page, what would your advice be to newspaper editors?
Now, this is the thing. I love my job. I love doing photo shoots. I love doing interviews. I love doing my reality shows. I love putting my life out there. I love it. But there comes to a point where don't take the piss out of me in the way that I know from talking to journalists from the past that if a picture come in, I'd be the name where they can write anything. Just write it. You don't need to check it. Whereas there'd be other celebrities, they would have to check with their managers that this...
It's a lack of respect, isn't it?
Yeah. There's absolutely no respect for me. They've crossed the line. They literally... will write anything. I don't know what else they could write about me that's damaging, unless I commit a murder, which obviously I'm not going to do that because I'm not a murderer. But they might as well have wrote I am, because the way they've portrayed me and really tried to manipulate me and bully me, this is all recent. Never used to be like that. And that's why I say I think the media now on everyone, they are dreadful. Really bad journalism is what I would say. And you know, I've lost a couple of friends in the industry. Caroline Flack, and I knew that Mike, who was in Love Island, they really don't help the media. And especially when they knew I was in my breakdown but still trying to antagonise me, it's cruel. It really is cruel. And no one deserves that. And like I say, I just want to get back up and do my press calls again and like start a working relationship again, because I love what I do. I'm an exhibitionist and I love it.
If you could go back to Katie, who's just had Harvey, and give her some advice to help make the last 20 years easier, what would that advice be? And would you give her a hug as well?
Oh, I'd done that in therapy. I had to look at myself on a chair as if I'm a little girl, what I would say. I would definitely have gone back and said, talk about, because even with Harvey, I never dealt with that impact of being told, you know, I'm 21, that because I got cancer while I was pregnant with Harvey in my finger, leiomyosarcoma. And I was like, yeah, just get on with it. Nothing I've done, like even from a young kid, I processed, I've just got on with it, got on with it. So back to myself in my early 20s, I definitely would have said to myself, don't rush relationships, don't trust managers, don't trust it, always have everything in writing, make sure you own the copyright of your pictures, and find someone financially to guide you. About tax, VAT, even though I did have people then, but obviously when I met the second husband, it wasn't like that. Just this is stuff that you learn when you're older that I would advise myself when I was younger. Because if I knew a lot of the stuff then, I wouldn't have been in the positions or situations I were in, especially when it comes to relationships and stuff and managers, stuff
that's,
like that.
That's such good advice. I feel like that needs to be your next book, just like life advice from Katie Price.
Because I think a lot of us. Hey, you've got to do a mental health life advice book. There's so much, like my priory notes. I put some of them in my book and my ADHD assessment in the book, like how it was. I want to put my priory notes in it to show people how I was and what I was thinking at that time. It's really scary to know I was like that. And like, that's why now, like, you've got social media, and I do the podcast with my sister weekly, because I talk about a lot of mental health, real life stuff, and I like it that I get listeners' questions about dilemmas and stuff like that. That's why I love, like, you girls, I love doing my podcast with my sister, because it's real, not manufactured. It's exactly how we talk. So I know that we do help a lot of people, and, you know, it's good. I love it.
It's so good. And I think that, you know, chatting to us today will definitely have helped a whole bunch of NetMums listeners. So thank you so much for joining us today, Kate. It's been so fab to chat to you.
Thank you. I hope you've got a lot of your questions answered, because I talk a lot.
Oh, it's good. We love that. Honest, we had to
cut about half of them. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Most of them you'd answered anyway. Thank you, Katie.
Oh, thank you so much.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in NetMums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.